You might not be an A, but you are a B plus. Solid B plus.
Welcome back to the Solid B Plus Podcast. Yes, I'm actually doing another episode. I know it's been a while. On the show this week, I'm going to be taking a look at NXT TV as well as the card for TakeOver Dallas. I got some news about the Global Cruiserweight Series. Going to look at Aztec Warfare 2 in Lucha Underground, probably my favorite thing that happened last week. A look at the Supercard of Honor shows for Ring of Honor, which are taking place this weekend in Dallas. Also, a look ahead at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Invasion Attack show, and some indie wrestling news to round out the show. But before all that, you can find the Solid B Plus Podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher and just, you know, anywhere you can, because that helps my show become more visible to other wrestling fans. Follow me on Twitter, at Joe Archie, JoeArchy. And yes, I am related to that guy from Villanova. He's my third cousin or something, but I don't know him. Give the show a like on Facebook. Send the show an email, solidbpluspodcast@gmail.com. And you can check out the Wednesday Wrestling Minutes articles on ringrustradio.com. Because, as you may have noticed, as I said before, this is the first episode I'm doing in a while. About a month, maybe. Maybe even more. I don't know. Because my day job has taken up a lot of my time lately, and it's been hard for me to actually get this show together in between watching all the wrestling that I have to watch to actually put the show together. But I still do Wednesday Wrestling Minutes for Ring Rust Radio. And if you want to read those notes, which I use to make this show, they're on ringrustradio.com. And with all that out of the way, it's time for NXT. Coming up this Friday, NXT TakeOver Dallas, which is shaping up to be a much better show than WrestleMania on paper and just probably in reality. But before we get to Dallas, we have to watch one last episode. Well, I guess two more episodes, because this is from last week, and then there's going to be another one this week before the actual TakeOver Dallas. And that one's probably going to be just as boring as this episode was, but I'm still going to talk about it anyway. On the opening of NXT TV last week, Elias Sampson faced Johnny Gargano, and Gargano actually picked up the singles victory. I'm not sure how many of those he's had in NXT, if he's had any before. And commentary made the point of noting that Sampson was undefeated coming into this match, but, I mean, does anyone really care about that? Does anyone really care about Elias Sampson? The dude is still just so boring. I mean, I'll give him credit where it's due. He's got good aggressiveness in the ring and good mannerisms and stuff, but his character is just so boring. And there's been literally no advancement or explanation of him since he's debuted. And it's just, why do I care? Why do I care about this guy? And unfortunately, I think this match was more about Sampson taking a loss than Gargano getting a win. Since after the match, Sampson kept attacking Johnny Gargano until Apollo Crews ran out to make the save. And that's all leading up to a Elias Sampson-Apollo Crews match at TakeOver, which I hope is better than the match that I saw between those guys at an NXT house show at the Tower Theater, because that was just, oh my god, that was like so boring. You would think that Apollo Crews matches would be exciting, that they'd be fast-paced and that they'd be high-intensity and he'd be doing some flippy stuff and he'd be just like flying all over the place. But no, it was just like he was working holds and then Elias Sampson was working holds, slowing down the match, and so it was just like, this match is already slow, it can't be slowed down much more, but I mean, they were doing their best to slow it down more, and it was not good. So, hopefully, they were just working out the kinks for their TakeOver match. And the next match on TV last week, Finn Balor defeated Rich Swann. Swann got a pretty good reaction, and the offense that he got in during the match was really good. But overall, it was more, it was obviously about Finn Balor getting a convincing win going into TakeOver. And I'm not really sure what Swan's standing in NXT is right now. I mean, he seems like an on-again, off-again guy, like Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he becomes a full-time NXT guy. After that, Alexa Bliss defeated Sarah Dobson, and she's been on NXT once or twice before. She wrestles as Crazy Mary Dobson on the indies, and most of the time I'm pretty impressed with her on the indies, but this match wasn't that great. Dobson and Bliss just did not seem to click, and the match was like pretty uneven overall. Blake and Murphy distracted the ref and helped Alexa Bliss get the win, so hopefully they're positioning Alexa Bliss to be one of the top women in the division, you know, like after WrestleMania, after Bayley goes up, and probably once Emma goes up too, because she appeared on Main Event a week or two ago. I mean, despite the lackluster match, I'd still really like to see Crazy Mary get a full-time job there. Next, Samoa Joe went nuts and choked out Bull Dempsey with a coquina clutch, and then made his way into the ring and choked out Dempsey's opponent, Danny Burch, with a coquina clutch. And it made Joe look totally out of control heading into TakeOver, sending a message to Balor that he's not going to be holding anything back in their title match in Dallas. But it was weird to see Bull Dempsey on NXT again, because they must have taped this episode like a long time ago, considering that Bull Dempsey left the company in like early February, and now we're heading into April, and somehow they still have TV matches of him left. It's like, how many? I thought they did tapings for NXT a lot more often than that. After that, there was a really, really good American Alpha video package. It gave us insight into who Jason Jordan and Chad Gable are as people and as athletes. It gave us background on their amateur wrestling careers and how they've fallen short of achieving goals in the past. But now that they're together and working together, they're focused on winning the tag team belts. And, you know, something like that is really what they need for Elias Sampson to just flesh out his character a little bit more and give us a reason to care. Because people already liked American Alpha a lot, and this gives you even more reason to care about them as people, whereas Elias Sampson is just some guy who wears, like, douchey clothing and carries a guitar and spouts the same line over and over again. I'm not talking about him anymore. And in the main event of the show, Asuka makes Emma tap out to the Asuka Lock. And I'm just realizing that they both basically have the same name for their finishers. It's just their first name and then the word lock afterwards. So they should probably do something about getting more creative finisher names for the ladies in NXT. But this match was really good, though. Asuka has been dominant so far in her NXT career, but Emma showed that she learned a few things from their past matches, and she came close to picking up the win a couple of times, but, I mean, Asuka never really looked like she was in danger of losing at all, and picked up the victory heading into her women's title match at TakeOver. And speaking of TakeOver, the time has finally come. NXT TakeOver Dallas is this Friday. Usually their live shows are at like 8 p.m., but I think I heard that this is later for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why, and I haven't looked into it. So just keep an eye out for when exactly that's going to be on the network if you want to watch it live, which, I mean, why wouldn't you? But the build to TakeOver Dallas has been kind of uneven so far. I mean, the main event scene has barely included Finn Balor to this point, and it's mainly been focused on Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe fighting over the number one contendership. While the women's picture didn't even have a build to a number one contender, it was just Regal showed up one day and announced out of the blue that Asuka would be the one to face Bayley at TakeOver. I mean, obviously Asuka had been like dominating the NXT women's division since she showed up, but still it was just like there wasn't a match for it, there wasn't a build for it. Like Asuka showed up and like wiped the belt off of Bayley one time, and so you know it's like, oh, she wants the belt, and then Regal shows up a week or two later and it's like, oh, Asuka's the number one contender. It just kind of happened. And in fact, like American Alpha's build towards their title shot has been the best of any contender, even though the Revival has spent most of this time going into TakeOver being more concerned about Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy. But despite all that, the show is going to be really, really good, probably a lot better than WrestleMania is going to be. And the card for TakeOver Dallas is Baron Corbin versus Austin Aries, American Alpha versus The Revival for the tag titles, Elias Sampson versus Apollo Crews, Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura. I didn't get to talk about that a week or two ago whenever it was they announced it, but that's awesome. That is going to be a great match, maybe even match of the night. Bayley versus Asuka for the women's title, and Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor for the NXT title. And there's a lot of unpredictability on this card. It's really hard to call any of the winners here. I mean, usually you can tell if someone is on track to head to the main roster, which would indicate them losing at a big show, and then heading up to the main roster after WrestleMania, but it's really kind of ambiguous right now. As much as I think that Aries should beat Baron Corbin, it kind of doesn't make any sense for one of their like next big thing guys like Corbin to lose to an NXT newcomer like Austin Aries. It's like, yeah, I know Austin Aries has been around a long time. He's a veteran. He's worked for practically every company there is in North America. And don't get me wrong, I'm not happy about the fact that Baron Corbin's probably going to win, but I see Baron Corbin getting the win over Austin Aries in Dallas. Probably not entirely cleanly, but it's probably going to happen. I could also definitely see American Alpha winning the tag belts, but the Revival could just as easily retain. I mean, their reign has been pretty lackluster so far, and they haven't done much besides feud with Enzo and Cass. Like, this one is a toss-up, but, you know, I'll be happy with the tag belts on either team, really. In between Elias Sampson and Apollo Crews, I talked about it before. I hope it's not the snooze fest I saw at the live show in Philly. It'll probably be Sampson slowing down the pace until Apollo Crews gets the win out of nowhere. Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura, that has the potential to steal the show. I'm looking forward to this match maybe more than anything else on WrestleMania weekend, and I have no doubt that it's going to be great. Nakamura is probably going to be getting the win here, setting up his upcoming run in NXT, while Sami Zayn just goes to the main roster full-time after this, hopefully. Because I know why they sent him back to NXT once he came back from surgery. It was just, you know, to help him get back into the swing of things, shake off any ring rust. He didn't really need to go back to NXT, though, so hopefully he's just a main roster from here on out. Also, I think it was Enohito on Twitter, or it was like some where he was mentioning an interview from, I think it was like a Japanese news site, about how Nakamura said that he's heard his WWE theme and that he really likes it a lot. So I'm really, really interested in hearing his theme song, because his New Japan theme song is one of my favorites going these days. After that, Bayley and Asuka, that's going to be really great. I mean, Asuka's been one of the best wrestlers in NXT, maybe even the whole company since she's joined, and I have no doubt that they're going to put on a classic. Bayley's been in NXT for a long time, and it's about time that she goes to the main roster already, but before that, she's probably going to drop the title to Asuka here. I would have thought that they would have dropped the title to more of a pure heel than having a match between two females who are basically baby faces and who are the two most over women in the whole division. But I mean, I'm not mad about Asuka being the next champ, that's for sure. And the main event, like most of this card, it's pretty unclear who's going to win. I mean, this would be Joe's second main event title shot, and it would kind of make him look like shit if he loses here again. Balor has been champ for a while, so I could definitely see him losing and going up to the main roster with Bayley. But then again, there's that whole Balor Club thing looming, and people know that Doc Gallows and Karl Anderson are going to be coming, and there's no bigger stage to debut than WrestleMania weekend, saving Balor's title. But if that were to happen, it would turn Balor, and it would make Joe look like a face, which wouldn't be easy to buy since Joe has been such a crazy person heading into TakeOver. So it's still hard to say what will happen at TakeOver, but I'm going to pick Joe to win and have Balor go up to the main roster after WrestleMania. Oh, and one more thing before we get into Lucha Underground. I think it was last weekend or the weekend before, it was announced that the American qualifying matches for the Global Cruiserweight Series are going to be taking place in Evolve, while British qualifiers will be taking place in Progress Wrestling and Revolution Pro. And this is huge news, because in just a few years, WWE has gone from never mentioning other wrestling products to having their events closely tied to smaller indie companies. It'll be really interesting to see how these qualifiers are handled, since these qualifiers aren't taking place in NXT proper. I'm not sure how they're going to be referenced or produced for the actual Cruiserweight Series show on the network. Because while WWE is opening up a little bit to working with other companies, they still very much want total control over the way their content is produced and presented. So I'm not sure if these qualifiers are going to be filmed by WWE crews and then shown later on, or if they're just going to be referenced once the actual series starts, because these aren't part of the actual series. These are just qualifying matches, which I can't imagine WWE will show footage from a show that they didn't film themselves. But I mean, whether these matches are shown in some form on the network, or if it's just a way to get more eyes on companies like Evolve and Progress and Revolution Pro, I mean, the Global Cruiserweight Series is still shaping up to be one of the most interesting and unique concepts that WWE has come up with in a long time. And with that, it's time to get into Lucha Underground. On the 10th episode of Season 2 of Lucha Underground, we got Aztec Warfare 2. And this was the first taping that I saw when I went out to Los Angeles in December. And it was amazing to see live, because I had no idea what exactly I was going to be seeing when I got there. And then when they told us that the first thing they were doing was Aztec Warfare, I lost my shit. It was so cool to see this live. As the episode opens on TV, we found out that Pentagon Jr. won't be in Aztec Warfare, and this is payback from Katrina for Pentagon attacking her a few weeks ago, which Pentagon is not at all happy about that, for obvious reasons, for more than one reason. Famous B was at ringside scouting out talents during Aztec Warfare, and I remembered seeing him during the taping. Like, it didn't come back to me until I watched the episode, but I remembered seeing him. But I didn't recognize him as being Famous B. I just thought, like, oh, they're doing something over there. He's clearly part of the show, but I didn't realize that it was Famous B. And I clearly, you know, didn't know about the infomercials while they were doing the tapings. But then once I saw him, it all came back to me and it all made sense. Phoenix entered at number one and also puts the title on the line as Katrina ordered. But in second in Aztec Warfare is Rey Mysterio Jr. making his Lucha Underground debut, which that was amazing too, because I had no idea that Rey Mysterio was going to be in Aztec Warfare. And at the time, I didn't realize that that would be the first time that he was actually in the temple in the ring for Lucha Underground either. Third in Aztec Warfare is King Cuerno, followed by Argenis, but Argenis doesn't really last long. And it seems like King Cuerno is back to mid-card hell, since he doesn't last much longer either, which is really unfortunate, because I'm a big fan of King Cuerno, and I'm glad that he got a little bit of a rub at the beginning of the second season of Lucha Underground, but it's too bad that he seems to be back to doing nothing, basically. The next three people in are Johnny Mundo, Joey Ryan, and Prince Puma. And Joey Ryan has this great strategy of handcuffing himself to a railing outside of the ring so he won't be able to get pinned, but it comes back to bite him in the ass later on. And also about this, when I saw the taping, I saw him, you know, handcuff himself to the thing, and I was like, oh, that's a good strategy. But it also makes even more sense because he's an undercover cop, and that's why he has handcuffs. Like, I had... There's so many little things that Lucha Underground does right to make these stories and characters come together so well and just make them seem like actual people, not just dumb characters on TV like WWE does. Anyway, after that, Jack Evans is in at number 8, followed by Taya at number 9. I always said Taya. They say Taya. I don't know. Whatever. And in the ring, it's 3 Rudos versus 3 Technicos as Mundo Evans and Taya face off against Rey, Puma, and Phoenix. And the Rudos focus on Rey, but then Cage is in at number 10, and he goes right after Johnny Mundo and Taya. And those two seem to have aligned themselves with Jack Evans, at least for this match, and I am all about that partnership. Because when Jack Evans was working with PJ Black, I was like, that's all right. That could be a little better. But Mundo and Evans, that's a really good pairing. That's a really good partnership right there. All during the match, Famous B was giving out cards to wrestlers and fans, too, telling them that he can help make them famous. And also, like, all throughout the show, Famous B is making notes about wrestlers, but B's notes pretty much just amount to him being like, I like that guy. I like him. And it's just like a little thing. It's just like there's not much to what Famous B is doing, but it's just something extra added on top of this whole crazy story that just makes everything even better. Mundo and Taya work together to beat down Cage, and then they throw Cage through one of the office windows, but you can't keep the machine down. And after Masquerita Sagrada enters at number 11, Cage hits Mundo with Weapon X on the floor, rolls him back into the ring, and Prince Puma pins him with a shooting star, a standing shooting star. Marty the Moth is in at number 12, and he takes out everybody in the ring surprisingly easily, which was kind of a surprise because he's usually, you know, just like a mid-card, lower-tier heel jobber guy. Then at number 13 and 14 is Drago and the Mac. Drago goes to work on Evans right away, and Joey gets misted in the face by Drago accidentally. And that was another little fun side aspect of this Aztec Warfare, was because Joey Ryan was just a sitting duck on the outside, everybody that got near him would either like punch him or super kick him, or he got misted in the face. So basically he was just getting beat up the whole time and he couldn't do anything about it because he handcuffed himself to this railing. Masquerita Sagrada and Rey Mysterio work together and eliminate Marty. But it happened before the Mac got into the match, which was kind of surprising. But I guess maybe they're just saving it for more confrontations between them down the line. Chavo Guerrero is in at number 15, and Drago and Jack Evans are fighting through the crowd at this point, and they're both taking like crazy bumps on the wooden stands, and you can see these like these huge bruises just beginning to like welt up on Jack's back. And it was around this time that Rey Mysterio went for 619 on Cage. But Taya pulled the ropes down on Rey Mysterio, and he just goes flying out through the floor. And then Johnny Mundo comes back with a cinder block, hits Cage in the head with it, and then Taya eliminates him. But soon after that, Phoenix pinned Taya with a German suplex, and even though it's just a mid-card feud, I really like this whole Johnny Mundo, Taya, Cage storyline that's going on. And it seems like maybe even Jack Evans might be getting involved. Though that could have just been a little partnership that took place during Aztec Warfare. PJ Black is in at number 16, and he and Evans immediately start working over Drago. But then Aerostar is in right after that at 17 and helps out his buddy Drago against Black and Evans. But they're saving this feud for later, too, it seems, because right after PJ Black and Aerostar get in the match, Black pins Drago with a brainbuster, and Aerostar pins Jack Evans with a crazy destroyer from the top rope. El Dragon Azteca comes in the match at number 18 and just starts tearing shit up. I'm not sure who it is under the mask, but he showed in Aztec Warfare that he's really quick and really agile and that he can fly with the best of them. Tejano comes in at number 19 and eliminates PJ Black, followed by the final entrant, who we've known this whole time, would be Mil Muertes. But before Mil even gets to the ring, Pentagon Jr. comes out of the crowd and just smashes him with a chair over and over again. And then Pentagon rolls Mil into the ring. Rey hits a splash on him, and Puma leans on Rey afterwards, and Mil Muertes is eliminated just like that. And Mil is furious, and he chases Pentagon out of the ring, out of, you know, ringside area. And Katrina is equally upset, and she like shrieks at Vampiro, tells him to come over here, and slaps him, and then tells him to get the hell out. And I'm not sure, did Katrina just fire Vampiro? Because it kind of seems like it. But for some reason, the clock is still counting down, and suddenly, Dario Cueto is back in the temple. He appears at the top of the stairs, reclaiming his position as El Jefe in the temple, and adds one more participant to the match, the monster Matanza. And we saw Matanza for the first time last week on Lucha Underground, but this is the first time that he's actually in the temple and actually in a match. And even though he's not all that tall, he is solidly built and possesses just like crazy strength. He throws everybody around like it's nothing. Everybody in the match gangs up on him at first, but nobody can get any kind of advantage over the guy. Phoenix goes after him first, like the fighting champion he is, but he gets caught in a crossbody, and Matanza plants him with this like crazy spinning World's Strongest Slam and eliminates him right away, ensuring that we'll see a new champion in Aztec Warfare. Matanza then eliminates the Mac, Aerostar, and Tejano all on his own in very quick succession. And at this point, there's not many people left in the match. Rey Mysterio and Dragon Jr. are talking strategy on the outside while Chavo does his best to hide. And then Matanza sets his sight on Joey Ryan, tearing apart the guardrail, and throws Joey Ryan into the ring and pins him after a series of gut-wrench suplexes. Only Rey, Dragon, Puma, and Chavo are left at this point until Chavo throws Dragon to Matanza, and Dragon is eliminated with a chokeslam. And then Chavo tries to start making an alliance with the other guys left to work together against him, but that doesn't go so well. And then Matanza eliminates him with a standing shooting star. So not only is Matanza a crazy powerhouse, but he can also do high-flying stuff as well, which just blows my mind. Puma and Rey Mysterio try to work together to take down Matanza, but there's still no match for the monster, who pins Puma after a series of suplexes. And then it's down to Rey Mysterio and Matanza, and Rey actually manages to stagger Matanza a few times and gets him off his feet and sets up for a 619, but Matanza just has none of it. Throws Rey around like a rag doll and pins him with that crazy spinning World's Strongest Slam to become the new Lucha Underground champion. And this episode was amazing. I think I liked this Aztec Warfare even better than the first one. And within one episode, Lucha Underground creates a whole slew of new storylines while also building on established stories. I mean, there's so many believable contenders to the top title, but with how strong Matanza looked in Aztec Warfare, it's really impossible to predict right now who could stop Matanza. I mean, if anybody can stop him, because they just made him look invincible in Aztec Warfare. In other Lucha Underground news, you can finally purchase episodes through another source without trying to find them on the internet. You can buy episodes or whole seasons of the show through iTunes. It's $2 for a standard def episode, $3 for a high def. For season one, it's $35 for standard def, $45 for HD. And season two, it's $30 for SD and $40 for HD right now. And I mean, that sounds kind of pricey, but considering how many episodes there are per season, it's basically just like a little over a dollar per episode if you buy the whole season. I mean, obviously, it's not preferable to a streaming service like Netflix so that you could watch old episodes of Lucha Underground, but it's a start, you know. I know that they are looking into streaming outlets, but I guess nothing has really panned out yet. And that's all for Lucha Underground, so let's get in a Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor is this Friday and Saturday night in Dallas, and usually I start the Ring of Honor section with ROH TV, but I didn't get a chance to watch it this week, and if I remember right, that they were advertising it as being just a clip show this week anyway, so it probably doesn't even matter. On Supercard of Honor, night one, announced matches so far: Christopher Daniels versus Bobby Fish, Matt Sydal versus Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong versus Moose. And those opening matches should be really fun, especially Sydal versus O'Reilly. The Ring of Honor Tag Team Champs War Machine and the Briscoes team up to take on All Night Express, Silas Young, and Beer City Bruiser. And I really hope this leads to a Briscoes War Machine feud, since we got robbed of that a few years ago, and it's something that I've wanted to see ever since. Adam Cole faces ACH, and I don't know why ACH is used as sporadically as he is, and I doubt he's going to get the win here against Adam Cole, so it's definitely not going to be the beginning of anything for him. The Top Prospect Tournament winner, Leo Rush, gets a world title shot against Jay Lethal, and it's pretty cool that they're making Rush seem like a big deal right away. I mean, I hope they keep up this momentum for him, because he's a young guy and he's really talented and he could be a star for them. And then in the main event, the Young Bucks take on the Motor City Machine Guns, and that's just going to be nuts. Both of these guys have had a lot more experience since the last time they met in TNA, and the Bucks versus Motor City is going to tear the house down. And then on night two, announced so far, All Night Express versus ACH and Matt Sydal. A four-corner survival number one contenders match between The Addiction, the Briscoes, Motor City Machine Guns, and the Young Bucks. Roderick Strong versus Bobby Fish in a two out of three falls match. And in the main event, Adam Cole takes on Kyle O'Reilly in a no-holds-barred match. And like I said, I hope the Briscoes win here and then go on to face War Machine. And I'd really like to see the two out of three falls match between Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong, and also the main event between Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. I'm kind of surprised that nothing has been announced for Dalton Castle yet, though, because the dude is so over, but they really don't treat him like a big star for some reason. I hope they're just slow playing it, because people love Dalton Castle, and it's days before Supercard of Honor, and they haven't announced anything for him yet. Also, one more thing about Ring of Honor. They really need to get their TV product in line with their live events. The production of their TV shows, like when they're taped and then when they air, is just too slow, and the turnaround needs to be speeded up. That, or they need to do a better job of writing the show, keeping in mind when the episodes are going to air, so that they match up with what's happening going on live shows and pay-per-views. Because, just for example, just this one example. Last week on TV, they had a tag gauntlet match to determine a number one contender for the tag team titles, and it was won by RPG Vice. Where is RPG Vice on the Supercard of Honor shows? When is their tag title shot? Why are they crowning another number one contender when, according to the TV show that I just watched last week, there already is a number one contender of the tag belts? I mean, fans are more connected to wrestling that they like than ever before. And many, especially Ring of Honor fans, keep up with what happens on TV and at live shows, you know, through Ring of Honor's website. So considering that, how are fans supposed to follow the product when there's basically two different timelines happening at once? Like, with what's happening on TV and then what's happening at big, live shows and big pay-per-views and stuff. Because by the time Supercard of Honor is referenced on TV, it'll be weeks and weeks from now, and probably close to the next big show happening. Because yes, Ring of Honor stepped up the look of their TV set in a big way recently, and it makes their TV show look so much better. But they really need to do a better job of reconciling their TV timelines and their live show timelines, because as unfortunate as it is, American wrestling fans expect a presentation like WWE, meaning they expect one current coherent product that they can follow along where the TV shows build to the next big shows. Because right now, the Ring of Honor TV show is basically constantly playing catch up to what's going on with the live events and the pay-per-views. And that needs to change if you really want to get people hooked to what you're doing. Because when the stuff that you watch on TV is different than what's happening at live shows, it makes things confusing. And it turns off casual fans, and that is one of the biggest hurdles to Ring of Honor's growth right now, I think, is hooking those casual fans and making them Ring of Honor fans. But that's all I got for Ring of Honor right now, so let's get into some New Japan Pro Wrestling and round out the show with some indie news.
Young Bucks, go home! Please go home! Young Bucks!
Invasion Attack, New Japan's next big event, is taking place on April 10th, which you can watch live or after the fact on New Japan World. And a couple of notes before I get into the actual card itself. At the finals of the New Japan Cup, Hirooki Goto finally shook Kazuchika Okada's hand after he had been turning his back on him for a few shows. And at first, I thought this was just Okada trying to show a sign of respect to Goto, and then Goto not wanting to accept it because he lost to Okada and because he's got too much pride. But apparently, what was lost in translation was that Goto was also offering, Okada was also offering Goto a chance to join Chaos, which he finally did at the New Japan Cup Finals. And that really adds an interesting dynamic to Chaos now, because Okada removed one of his biggest threats to the IWGP heavyweight title by adding Goto to his own stable. It adds another heavyweight to Chaos to, say, maybe go after the IC title, which Goto has already won several times. And it creates even more possibilities for heavyweight tag teams in Chaos between Ishii and Okada teaming with Goto. But the biggest thing is that it gives Goto something to do, because he's been pretty directionless since he failed to beat Okada for the title after Wrestle Kingdom. And this is also going to be Yoshitatsu's first match back since having his neck broken by a Styles Clash. And he's been referred to as the Bullet Club Hunter leading up to this return match, which is definitely a cool direction for him to go in, looking for revenge against the stable that almost ended his career. And it would have had even more impact if AJ Styles was still around. But as it is, it gives Yoshi something interesting to do, and it keeps the Bullet Club in people's minds, since the group has kind of been splintering lately. But moving on to the Invasion Attack card itself, it is as follows. Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, and Yujiro Takahashi taking on Juice Robinson and Ryusuke Taguchi. Chaos, Kazushi, Sakuraba, Toriyano, and Yoshihashi versus Liger, Satoshi Kojima, and Yuji Nagata. Chaos is Hirooki Goto and Tomohiro Ishii. Hey, look at that. Taking on Los Ungovernables, Jay Japan, Evil, and Bushi. IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. The champions, Matt Sydal and Ricochet, taking on RPG Vice. Kushida defends the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title against Will Ospreay, which is going to be fucking awesome to see Will Ospreay in New Japan finally. The Elite, Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson, you know, the Young Bucks, they defend the Never Openweight six-man titles against Hiroshi Tanahashi, Michael Elgin, and Yoshitatsu. Katsuyori Shibata defends the Never Openweight title against Hiroyoshi Tenzan, which is going to be okay, I guess. I wish they would have something more for Shibata to do right now, since he's pretty much just been defending. He defended the NEVER title against Satoshi Kojima on a Road to Invasion Attack show, which they didn't even film for some reason. That match probably would have been pretty good. I would have liked to have seen it, but I don't think they even filmed it. And then he's taking on Tenzan. After that, he's probably going to take on Nagata and then Nakanishi, I would imagine. I guess they're just giving him something to do, like biding time before he can get into an actually interesting feud. Because the New Japan fans love Shibata, and I think a lot of American fans really like him too, but he's just not doing anything of note right now. GBH, Tomoaki Hanma, and Togi Makabe defend the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Titles against the Gorillas of Destiny. Tama Tonga and his brother Tangaloa, I'm not exactly sure what his name is. He's Camacho from WWE. And I don't want to lead with that, because if you just say Camacho from WWE, just people just turn off immediately and go like, oh, some jobber then. It's like, but they're actually brothers, and he showed up at one of the Road to Invasion Attack shows, which you can read my notes for on ringrustradio.com. I'm not going to be talking about him right now because I don't have him in front of me or formatted or anything, but he showed up there during Tama Tonga's match against Togi Makabe, and that match was pretty good. He's been showing a lot more fire than he has in a long time, and actually giving him something interesting to do with his half-brother, should hopefully lead to some bigger stuff for them, because they need to make the heavyweight tag title scene more interesting, because outside of GBH, there's like nothing. They've had to create a team between, you know, the Gorillas of Destiny, and that's Gorillas, not Gorilla, like the animal. It's Gorillas of Destiny. And Tonga also called them God, which is kind of, I didn't even pick up on at first, but that is, you know, the abbreviation. But yeah, they need to do something with the heavyweight tag team, because there's, I mean, tag team division, because there's just nothing going on. And then the main event, Kazuchika Okada defends the IWGP heavyweight title against Tetsuya Naito. And that match is going to be amazing, because Okada is, he's the top guy. He's the ace right now. And Naito is proving that after the fans rejected him a few years ago when he won the G1 title and then had his title shot at, I think it was Wrestle Kingdom 8, and fans just like were not into it, they love him now. There's so much Los Ingobernables merch in the crowd at these New Japan shows. People in America are all about what Naito is doing right now. I don't think that he's going to beat Okada here, but if he keeps this up, him being a constant foil to Okada is really going to position him as one of, if not the top guys in New Japan. That's all I got for New Japan right now. So let's finish out the show with some indie news. There's going to be a ton of indie wrestling happening over WrestleMania weekend between WrestleCon, the WWN Live Super Show. There's going to be Evolve shows, CCW. But I'd imagine that a lot of that stuff is sold out by now. And one person who had been advertised for that weekend, and who all, in all likelihood won't be there, is Speedball Mike Bailey. Because according to a story making the rounds on the internet, which, God, I hope it's not true, Speedball is not allowed to return to America for another 5 years. I don't know if it's 100% confirmed or not, but it pretty much seems like it's true. And because Speedball is Canadian and he would cross the border into America to come and do wrestling shows, there's something to do with visas and work visas. And if you're coming into America to go to an indie wrestling show to make $50, like Canada wants their cut. And if you're not giving them their cut, and if you're not working on like an actual work visa, they will just ban you outright. Because the same thing happened to Silesia Sparks, who was an up-and-coming female wrestler. She had been working in AIW and other places in America. She was Jay Lethal's muscle in the House of Truth for a while, and she got hit with that same 5-year ban and then just up and retired because there's not that big of an indie scene in Canada. And if the same thing is true of Speedball Mike Bailey not being allowed in America for up to 5 years, it's a huge loss to the American indie scene, because he had been tearing it up for the past couple of years, having great matches in PWG, in CZW, and Beyond Wrestling, and so many other companies. And plus, just to add insult to injury, I read another rumor that he was due to have a WWE tryout in the spring, which I gotta imagine is probably off now. I mean, I don't know how much accuracy there is to that, but that just, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because he has been doing so well in recent years. I mean, there's still an indie scene in Canada. There's companies like Smash Wrestling, Alpha One, C4, IWS, and others that aren't coming to me right now. But it's nothing like getting exposure on the American independent circuit. And thankfully, it doesn't seem like Speedball is going to be retiring because of this. Because a few days after this news came out, I saw on Twitter that he's booked to face Marty Scurll in Rev Pro in the UK in July. So hopefully that means he's going to be staying active, and hopefully he'll be able to appeal this bullshit and that he'll be able to come back to America, because Speedball is one of my favorite independent guys right now, and that's just such bullshit. I don't know why Canada is such a fucking stickler for that border stuff, especially when it comes to wrestlers, because it's just like, what, they're coming over here to make like $30. They're just doing it because they love wrestling, but you gotta, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to be like, to talk any more intelligently about it other than to just be annoyed about the fact that I'm not going to be able to see one of my favorite wrestlers for a long time. So I'm just going to leave it at it's bullshit and fuck you, Canada. TNA recently announced that they signed 5 indie talents. Pepper Parks, Cherry Bomb, the former Sylvester LaFour and Marcus Louis and Marche Rocket and Parks and Cherry Bomb. They've been all over the indies in recent years, and I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long for either of them to get signed to a bigger company, like especially Cherry Bomb, since she's been one of the top female talents in North America for a long time now. And it's kind of weird, but not surprising, that TNA would pick up NXT guys like LaFour and Louis, who are going by their real names now, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. And hopefully they'll get a chance to do more in TNA than they did in NXT, because LaFour did next to nothing, and Louis had that one storyline where he lost his hair to Enzo and Cass, and then just, like, faded off into nothingness. And the final guy, Marche Rocket, I haven't heard of him in a long time. He used to work for CZW. He used to work for Chikara occasionally as part of a stable called The Soul Touches, and it's been a long time since I've heard of him, and I didn't even realize he was still wrestling, but if memory serves correct, Rocket is a high flyer who should fit in really well in the X Division. CZW's Best of the Best 15 is coming up on April 9th, and if all goes correctly, I should be there, which is going to be awesome, because I went to Best of the Best last year, which Speedball won, bringing up some painful memories, because he's not going to be there this year. But Best of the Best is always a really good show that CZW puts on, and it started as the annual tournament started out as just a junior heavyweight show, but over the years it evolved into a tournament to showcase the best talents on the indie scene. And announced for Best of the Best 15 so far are Desmond Xavier, Dave Crist, Leo Rush, Joey Janela, David Starr, Jonathan Gresham, Ryan Gallione, Anthony Henry, Ethan Page, and Ricky Shane Page. And those guys aren't related at all. They just happen to have the same last name. And also, at Best of the Best 15, an Ultimate Opportunity Scramble match, which it didn't say what the reward is, but I gotta imagine it's a title shot of some kind, between Tony Nese, Ethan Case, Aaron Williams, Brittany Blake, Jason Cade, and Chip Day. And I don't know why Nese just isn't in the Best of the Best proper itself, because, I mean, he's better than any of these other guys in this scramble match. He hasn't done a lot lately that I've seen on the indies, but he still should be in the tournament itself. I don't know why he isn't. Maybe that's what the opportunity is. Maybe it's for a spot in Best of the Best. I don't know why they would have it on the show itself, but whatever. I don't really know. But it's also cool that CZW is utilizing female talents in their matches now, because there's so much talent in terms of female wrestlers these days, and with the buzz about, intergender wrestling between Lucha Underground and the stuff that Kimberly has done in Beyond Wrestling and in Chikara, that having a female or a few females who aren't afraid to mix it up with the men should really bring a lot more attention to CZW. And I haven't seen Brittany Blake work before, so I don't know exactly how good she is, but, I mean, there's promise, at least, for something, for the match itself to be interesting, and for her to have an interesting spot in CZW coming up, or going forward, I should say. And that brings me to the end of the show. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to the Solid B Plus podcast. You can find it on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Find me on Twitter, Joe Archie Diacono, at Joe Archie, JoeArchy. Give the show a like on Facebook. Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, because that'll help give me more visibility. And thanks for listening. I'm out of here.